These things are often discussed in the same breath. You hear people say options and futures. They are very different. They are still derivatives. But these things actually make sense. There is a reason why we have futures. They are been around for hundreds of years, and they are extremely useful in the world of finance and in the world of commodities. But that doesn't mean they aren't dangerous. They are more dangerous, potentially, for the individual investor than options. There are two times in a man's life when he should not speculate. When he can't afford it, and when he can. And Mr. Mark Twain knew that from personal experience. A writer, Mark Twain, was a whole lot smarter than the man, Samuel Clemens, who lost pretty much everything he owned on stupid investments. So he learned it the hard way. What are futures? Well, again, the technical term is futures contracts. And boy, that's hard to say. So most people just drop the contract and use the term futures. It's a commitment. It's on the back of the notes are on the back. This is chapter 14. And they're on the back. I know they put futures in the book before options. I understand why, but I like to do options first. That's 15. Chapter 15 and 14. And remember, I told you this a long time ago. There's a book in the library. There's two books in the library. That you can't take them out, but you can read them there. They're on reserve. A futures contract is a commitment to deliver a certain amount of some specified item at some specified date in the future. A buyer and a seller specify a commodity or financial instrument to be delivered and paid when the contract matures. The futures price is guaranteed by the contract. So what you're doing is you're saying, look, folks, I will buy or sell this item to you 6 months from now, or 3 months, or 9 months from now. They started with commodities. They started with what are called hard assets or real assets, such as wheat, soybeans, cattle, pork, gold, oil, and they have moved to financial assets. So here's the scenario. You're a producer of a commodity. You're a farmer in Iowa somewhere. Or what did I do it? Iowa? I don't know. Yeah, Iowa. And you have 1,000 acres of wheat. And you're here in April. Let's say it's a month ago. You know that if all goes well, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, in September, you're going to have 500,000 bushels of wheat. I don't know if that's right or not. I'm not a farmer. But let's say, if all goes well, you're going to wind up with 500,000 bushels of wheat. Well, you can today go online, call your broker, see what the price of corn is. I'm sorry, wheat. See what the price of wheat is in September when your wheat's ready. You can sell your wheat now. When you just put it in the ground for a certain price that you're happy with in 6 months. And of course you have to, Gary, you are under contract. It's a contract. You have decided, I will, what is it, selling for $6. You go online, you say, up, they're selling for $6. I'm happy with that price. I can make a profit. Everything's cool. So I sell my wheat now via the futures contract while it's still in the ground. The farmer can guarantee a price that he is happy with and will result in a profit. The contract states that he will deliver the wheat in September and receive $6 per bushel, no matter what happens to wheat prices. Now, what happens if wheat prices collapse? He's good. You know, he's going to get $6. What happens if wheat prices skyrocket? Oh, well, opportunity cost. But he signed the contract. He said, I'm going to sell that wheat for $6. Who needs 500,000 bushels of wheat? Kellogg's, General Mills, right? And the food companies. So consumers of commodities also use futures. If you're a Kellogg's or a General Mills or a Post cereal, you need tons and tons of wheat and rice and corn each year to make cereal and other foodstuffs. So via the futures contract in April, you can purchase that wheat to be delivered in September and pay $6 per bushel no matter what happens to wheat prices. So you see what you're doing?
That's the whole corn thing. there was some issues with corn.
What about corn?
Never mind.
if you're the company who needs this wheat, you can buy that wheat now to be delivered in September. And you're guaranteed to pay that price. If prices skyrocket, you're lucky. But if prices collapse, yeah.
So either way, if you're the farmer, you're not shooting for too high, because Kellogg's isn't going to pay for anything too high.
Right.
Then they're probably going to be basing it on like their forecasts of weather.
Exactly. It's a very difficult business. Do you know what's going to happen in the future?
No.
So when, like, he doesn't produce anything.
Right. This is why farming is such a difficult business. I don't know anybody have been living on a farm or been with farmers. It's a horrible business. It's terrible. Everything goes right. The sun shines at the right place. The bugs don't come. The rain comes at the right time. The crops are high. What happens to the price?
It goes down.
It plummets because everybody's got so much corn and all to do with it. The crops fail. The heat comes. There's no water. The bugs come and eat everything. The price skyrockets. Shit, I don't got nothing to sell. It's a tough business, farming, folks. That's why the government is so much involved in farming. Because if you don't feed your people, what happens? They get very testy. They start marching on the Washington and Sacramento and City Hall.
So what do they do? I mean, when it's rough and they don't produce what they said that they were going to produce.
That's when, you know, that's when you have farm aid and all kinds of other stuff. That's when you know, it's a problem. It's a definite problem. And that's why sometimes the government will actually pay farmers not to produce. They say, oh, crap, it's going to be a real bumper crop. So we'll pay this guy who's about ready to put his wheat in the ground. We'll tell him, don't do it. We'll pay you not to do it. Yeah, it's tough. It's not an easy business. Futures contracts allow producers and consumers of commodities to hedge their position. There's that word again. Taking a position opposite to your existing position in the underlying commodity or financial instrument. If you've never heard that bet, this saying, don't worry about it, but it's called hedge your bet. The farmer is protecting himself from wheat prices falling, and the cereal companies are protecting themselves from wheat prices rising. And so this is not just done with wheat and other commodities. It's done with metals and oil and gasoline and livestock and food fiber. And when you hear that the price of oil has gone up to $110 a barrel, that's not the price of oil today, folks. That's the price of oil 3 months from now, to be delivered 3 months from now. And then it has to be refined, and that takes several weeks. And then it finally makes its way to your gas station. And you say, the price went down $15. How come the price of gasoline is still high? Because it takes 6 months for that oil that they're selling today to actually make it to the refinery and then make it to the gas station. You know, people think they just go off the Santee and drop a straw on the ground or something.
Is that what they do?
Isn't that what they do? Yeah. Where's the gasoline come from? So you see, futures have been around for a long time, and they are very important for consumers and producers of products. What are financial futures? Well, the financial world adapted the technique of futures contracts to financial assets, treating financial assets like commodities, currencies, interest rates, stock and bond indices. I will deliver $25,000 worth of British pounds to you next April. Or I will purchase $10,000 worth of the Standard & Poor's 500 from you in August. You see, I treat stocks and bonds and currencies like wheat and corn and oil. For those working in the world of finance, and especially in the world of international finance, they can be very useful tools. You're a car manufacturer in the United States, and you know that next October, you're going to need 50,000 engines from your supplier in Japan. The manufacturer can buy a currency future for $20 million worth of Japanese yen payable in October. So now, what happens? If the dollar plunges against the yen, the manufacturer is protected. because he knows he's going to have $20 million worth of yen at the current price that he bought them for. Now, of course, if the dollar strengthens, he's screwed because he could buy more yen with fewer dollars. But that's why you think of these things as insurance. These futures, as hedge, you hear the term hedge your bet. You know, don't you bet on this? Well, bet on that, because if that goes wrong, that might.
Can people get in trouble for, or like instead of for hedging or hedging?
Well, it's not in trouble so much as it just costs a lot of money. But that's if you are a producer of the item or a consumer. The manufacturer is a producer of cars, and he needs to go to the producer of the engines, because he's going to consume the engines. So he is guaranteeing that he will have enough money to buy those engines in October if the dollar were to fall against the Japanese yen. You understand? It's the same idea as the producer of the farm. Some of you are falling asleep on me here. Now, can anyone purchase for futures?
Yes.
Lucky, exactly. You do not have to work in either the commodities world or the finance world to buy and sell futures contracts. Instead of hedging, you can speculate. You can be a speculator. You simply buy and sell the futures contract. You never actually deliver or take delivery of the commodity nor the financial assets. You could buy the 500,000 bushels to be delivered in September, even though you live in a condo in West LA and have never even seen a farm. Now, are you have any interest in actually taking delivery of 500,000 bushels of wheat? Why would you do that? Because you think the price is going to go up, and you can turn around and sell the futures contract before it expires, because you don't want the darn wheat. You're living in a condo because Kellogg's needs it, and Post Cereal needs it. You understand? You're speculating. You don't need the corn, wheat. Sorry, you don't need the wheat, nor are you producing the wheat, but you can take a position on either side in anticipation of it going your way. Now, what if it doesn't go your way? Oh, boy. Speculating is accepting the futures price risk without having a position opposite to the existing position in the underlying commodity or the financial instrument. You don't need the wheat, or you don't need the $20 million worth of yens, because you're not buying the engines. But you can still go ahead and do those transactions. And here's something from the fourth edition. Future speculation is risky, but it is potentially rewarding if you can accurately forecast the direction of future commodity price movements. Can anyone accurately forecast the future? No, there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to do it wrong. Nobody knows the future. If our LA speculator sitting in her condo had purchased the futures contract for 500 bushels a wheat to be delivered and wheat prices plummeted, she could potentially lose hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's how dangerous futures are. Because if the price moves against you, you better get out of that position. In fact, your broker will kick you. Come on in, Jasmine. Just sit down. Just have a seat. We're friendly people. Have a seat right there. What? Okay. So what did I say? Oh, your broker will not let you lose too much. They will stop you out, it's called. And we'll discuss that on Tuesday when we start talking about margins and futures. And shorting. They will not let you lose too much money, because if you don't come up with the money you lose, who has to make good on the transaction? The broker does. Right, so they're going to watch you like a hawk. And if you start losing too much money, bingo! They're going to say, you better give us more cash, or some of them won't even ask you. They'll just kick you out of the transaction. And you've locked in your loss. Here are some of the places where we buy and sell futures. But, of course, they're sold everywhere now. They're bought and sold everywhere. But Chicago was the place for futures. Why? Because that's where all the grain came through. And all the meat and foodstuffs and the slaughterhouses were. And so the Chicago Board of Trade, the Kansas City Board of Trade, another place for cattle to come through. The long position is the buyer of the futures contract. That's the consumer, protected from price increases. And the short position is called, and we'll discuss long and short this coming up, the seller of the futures contract. They're the person who is protected from the price decrease, the producer, the farmer. So, let's take a minute here. We got a couple minutes. Futures seem like options, right? Don't they seem a little bit like options? Well, they're similar, but they're very, very different. They work the same. There's potential for great rewards, but there is also much more of a likelihood of sustaining great losses. In fact, the potential losses from futures contracts are staggering. And just like options, they are a tremendous source of commissions for your broker. By the way, you can buy options on futures contracts. You understand? When you buy an option, you're only going to lose the $1 or the $2 that you paid for the option. So you could buy an option on a futures contract. So if the futures contract does well, you can buy the futures contract, turn around, sell it for a hefty profit. You knew it had to happen, right? So what's the final comment on futures?
Stay away from them.
Right. They're even more potentially radioactive than options. So, questions, comments, thoughts, ideas, criticisms, suggestions?
Aye, aye, aye.
I know. I apologize, but that's it, folks. That's the world. Remember I told you after chapter 11 that we were basically done the semester? I wasn't lying. I don't want you to do these things, but you need to know it. You need to know that it exists. Series 6. If you take the series 7, you're gonna have to know these things. What the hell did I just do with it? Okay. What? That's why I'm teaching you, folks. That's why the series 7 is the exam that you would take if you were to become a stockbroker. And it's very difficult. I won't kid you. It's a very difficult test. Much of what they ask you is very useless. Things you would just... I don't know what the CPA tests are like, but I bet you the CPA tests are far more important, far more... There's 120 questions for the first 3 hours, and then you get an hour off for lunch, and then there's another 120 questions in the last 3 hours. Same as the CPA? Okay, well that's 240, but still, it's pretty tough. It's a tough test.
How long does it take you for,
Studying is going to take, I tell people, it's going to take you about 2 months of, do we have any extras? Oh, come from the other side of the room. It's going to take you about 2 months 1 to 2 hours per day. You need to, and the books that are available have these practice exams. You take the practice exams over and over and over and over again. Now, the good news is, folks, the most important information is what we teach in Business 123. That you have, after this class, a strong foundation, if you were here and studied, you have a strong foundation of the most important investments, and that's the most important part of the exam. So the good news is that. The bad news is you got to learn all the stupid little ridiculous questions that you would never remember that they're going to ask you. If you needed to know it, you'd just look it up. Or you'd ask, the compliance officer, how many days do you have? They'll ask you a question like, how many days do you have to get back to somebody in case of a complaint against you? Well, I don't even need to ask that question. If someone has a complaint against me, I'm going to give it to my supervisor immediately. I'm just going to say, hey, here it is. Because what brokers would do is they just put it on the desk and say, oh, I'll get back to you. You understand? That's the kind of dark, niche. Anyway, Okay, fine. Now, I want to just start the next thing, because this one's going to take, like as the other one did, 2 days. So let's just see if we can get through. Questions?
No.
To see if we can get through a few of the slides, because this is good stuff. Good stuff. The book puts them at the beginning of the semester, which is kind of stupid, I think. Chapter 2. So we're going, what? We're at the end of the semester, and we're doing chapter 2? Yeah, the book puts us at the beginning of the semester. I think it's putting the cart before the horse, so that's why I threw it at the end. And we're going to concentrate on margin accounts and selling short. Just as the options in the futures were pretty darn confusing when you take the Series 7, so are the margin and selling short. And we won't get to that today. But let's take a few minutes to go through some slides about brokerage firms. Because you got to put your money somewhere, right? Yes, please. No, please. I like questions. Especially easy questions.
Because we have another phase after these and the final?
No. Just the final.
Oh, just the final.
And what day is the final?
Thursday,
May 23rd.
Okay.
And if you don't show up for the final, sorry, you're out of show. And no more.
So that's the final, but what's the test?
That's it. Well, the final is the next exam.
And we're going to be all the chapters?
Yes. It's going to... But relax. Breathe deeply. In and out. That's the key to success. You can't succeed in this world unless you breathe. All right? Remember that. Well, that's what I'm saying. Do you get it? Okay. It will be very general questions. If you were remotely sober throughout the semester, okay, and relatively aware of your general surroundings, they will be questions about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, questions that you would get from your family and friends, asking you, well, why don't I understand? What are dividends? You understand? That kind of stuff. The calculations will be just what we've done all semester long. Constant perpetual, discounted cash flow model. And some of you still don't have them yet. Yes, Gilbert? Yes, 2 pages. Two pages of notes.
And what would you suggest, like,
for us to just... Look at the hand. Remember the handouts? See all the terminology? Study the slides. Study the book. If you know where the book is. Anybody actually read the book in here? Anybody read it? It's dry. Yeah, I know. And it's one of the better ones out there. It's very dry. I try to spice it up. And the book is... Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? It's the problem. Now, where are you going to put your money? Anybody already have a brokerage firm? Anybody yet have a brokerage firm? Well, you know, what are you going to do? You got to deal with these bozos. I mean, these people. You've got 3 choices. The full-service brokers like Merrill Stench and Morgan Stupid, who really don't want you unless, and it used to be $50,000, $100,000. Now I hear people here saying things like, well, unless you have a $500,000, we don't even want you. And they're not cheap. The discount brokers, which have basically become one company with all the, there's a lot of the little smaller firms like A.G. Edwards and Edward Jones and that's what I belong to. I belong to a little mom and thing. Sometimes called mom and pop shops. But the big one is Schwab. Schwab is the big discount broker. And then the deep discount brokers, the internet brokers, they've emphasized technology. You don't actually ever talk to a broker. You do everything online. What can you expect to pay for each? What kind of service can you expect to pay from each? We will discuss that on Thursday. So bring your questions for the final if you have questions. You got to learn this stuff. You got to learn this stuff because it's going to be on the exam again. So any questions? Any quick questions? What are you doing?
Oh, it's
all finished. Yes, huge. All right. So I will see you all on Thursday. Study hard. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College. And we will go through chapter 2 on Thursday.